you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by Omigo Bidet. Omigo is the greatest thing to clean your butt, and we will tell you more about that thing later in the episode, but we have a fan contest. The best fan-filmed commercial for Omigo will win $500 plus an Omigo Bidet, and we will air the winning commercial on an episode of this podcast. Deadline to enter is October 29th. Email gasdigitalmarketing@gmail.com for more info. Okay, let's start the show.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Let's party.
Let's party indeed. Welcome to the Believe You Me podcast. Happy Monday, as certain people say, although I cringe and die inside every time I say Happy Monday, Happy Friday, whatever. But still, Happy Monday, Lewis.
I love Mondays. Am I crazy? Am I the only person? I think it's almost a mental thing. There's two types of people in the world. There's people that love Mondays and there's people that hate Mondays. And I love Mondays. I feel like Monday is the day that everyone starts fresh. If you're trying to make any business happen, they're like, you know what? Let's wait till Monday morning. Everyone starts their diet, their new leaf that they overturn in life. It's just a positive energy all around on Mondays. And I feel like Mondays is a great way to sort of get your life going. I love Mondays.
I also like Mondays. Although that said, when I worked in factories, I didn't like Mondays then because my life was fucking miserable. It meant getting out of work at out of bed at 6 a.m. in the freezing cold, putting on my shitty work clothes and sprinting to work, clocking in, and then spending 11 hours of the day hating life. But these days, Mondays are good. You know, I've got a more interesting life. I'm not trying to rub it in for anyone. Going to a factory job this morning. Apologies.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, right? So I think you're right. It is about, are you doing what you love? It's really as simple as that. So it's not even there's two types of people in the world that loves Mondays or hate Mondays. If you're doing what you love, you probably love Mondays. You're like, you know what, dude? I get to go to work and I really enjoy what I do. And I think if you're not typically doing what you love, you're living for the weekend. You love Friday. You're waiting for the end of the day. You're going out and partying. Yeah, maybe that's just the difference. I think probably when you were younger, you didn't fucking love your job. You hated it. You were dreading it. In fact, I know you did because I've been listening to Michael Bisping's
Never Win. Yeah, but the reality is, though, not everybody can do everything, something that they love. You know what I mean? So we're sitting here. We don't want to gloat too much because a lot of people listening to this right now, they may love their job. In fact, I was talking about this at the weekend to Rebecca. You know what I mean? Because, you know, the world needs people that do those types of jobs, you know what I'm saying? But we can't go on about it too much because some people might listen to this and go, you fucking prick, I hate my job. Stop going on about the fact that you enjoy your week. You know, some people don't appreciate it.
They should listen to this show and be inspired. They should quit the job they hate. That's what they should do.
The electricity goes off, the kids go hungry, they get no clothes, but hey, fuck it, they listen to us.
They won't. When's the last time you knew a person that starved to death?
Well, I don't live in Africa. You know what I mean? I don't live in Nigeria or wherever. There's some trouble going on out there right now. I don't know. I don't know anybody that's starved.
Many of our listeners are living in Africa or Nigeria as well.
I guarantee we have one or two. In fact, we have some in Cape Town. Listen to this. When I went to Cape Town last year to do that Warrior TV show. Incidentally, this Friday, my episode airs. So Warrior on Showtime, I think. But anyway, the first thing that happened to me when I got to Cape Town, I got out of the car and some geezer was coming down, a local. And he's like, hey, man, love the podcast, bro. And I was like, holy shit, in fucking Cape Town. So, Lewis, you stand corrected, my friend.
That might be true. I don't think the people that are starving, the people we're talking about who are starving in Africa are listening to the podcast. I don't think that they have access to podcasts. But I'm just saying that, yeah, I don't think that if you quit the job that you hate, I think you would probably figure out a way to pay your bills. You probably figure out a way to feed your children. And if you started going down a path toward doing something that you love, a year or two from now, you'd probably be in a better place than you would be if you just kept on down the path that you hate. That's all I'll say. Not the preachy and fucking.
And I just want to say, for anybody that does take Lewis's advice right now and quits their job and just walks out and says, you know, I've had enough of it, I wish you the best. You know, I do. I hope it works out.
But I thought you were going to tell them to go fuck themselves.
No, really don't be too hasty, though. Don't listen to this and go, you're right, and quit there and then. Maybe talk to your wife. Talk to your parents, your loved ones, your friends.
They're going
to
nag you. They're going to, yeah.
Don't quit work, okay?
People need jobs. First of all, your wife is down by the river carrying jugs of water on her head right now. These are still in Africa, by the way, okay? She doesn't. She's very busy. Don't ask her opinion. Quit your job and do something you love.
Yes, so there you go. Quit your job, everybody. Do what Lewis says. Be a comedian. Quit your work. Massive, massive fires at the weekend. We're about to get into all of them. There's a fires here. So if halfway through this podcast, I have to immediately quit and run out, then I do apologize. But there's huge fires here. It's all over the news, the local news here,
of course. How close are the fires to you?
About 5 miles away, which isn't, it sounds far, but it's not too far. Audie, my manager from Paradigm Sports, just messaged me because he's down there as well. We live pretty close to each other. He said it just went from 10,000 to 200,000 acres in an hour. So it's spreading like crazy. And the wind outside, like the palm trees are just blowing fucking everywhere. So super windy, which obviously with fires is terrible. Super dry here as well in Southern California. So yeah, as I say, just a little disclaimer. If I have to cut it short, I fucking apologize, but I value my life.
I don't know why. Is it because we have more access to media? Is it because we are, we're constantly looking at our phones and we have our finger on Twitter at all times? Have wildfires in California gotten crazier recently, or have they always been this crazy? I never heard about wildfires until like 2 years ago, and then it's all I fucking hear about.
Fires galore right now. It's just crazy. Fire after fire after fire. I don't know. We don't want to get into it because, again, it's kind of a political thing, which it shouldn't be. But
how's it political? You know, it's fire.
There's a little theory called global warming, which some people say exists and some people say it doesn't. I stand by it. I definitely getting warmer, definitely getting hotter. It's on fire down the fucking street. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't know how hot you want it to get. It's literally on fire. You can see the smoke in the air. How can you say it's not getting warmer? And that's a joke, by the way.
You're right. I think that there is a politicized thing there, which is crazy that everything wasn't, in a weird way, wasn't coronavirus nice for like a month? Because it kind of brought us together. Like, you know, we're all dying of a pandemic. At the very least, we're doing it together. And then even that got politicized, which is fucking crazy, right? But it is kind of interesting because I don't know the political angle on it. I think Republicans don't believe in global warming and Democrats believe in it. I think that's what it is. But I'm not a scientist. I don't know the difference. I have no idea. I literally have no idea even really what global warming is. I probably know less than the average person, but I will say from the outside perspective, it seems like California has been burning a hell of a lot more over the past few years.
Yes. And then one might say, if you're of a political persuasion, that is, it's forest management. Okay. But still, whatever. I don't want to get into it, but I do know this. I'm sweating my balls off right now. It's super fucking hot. I know. There is fires down the street and I'm hot. Rebecca's got the heat on, okay? It was a little bit chilly when we woke up this morning. So there, of course, the fire's blazing. The heat is on and I'm sweating like crazy. So I wasn't being rude. I was texting Rebecca saying, babe, turn this heat off because the vent in here is just there and it does get like a sauna in here.
Most people don't know what the wildfires are like. I never really understood what they were like either. I have a friend who lives in California, like an hour outside of LA, where like last year the hills were really burning and we got caught up driving through them. And it is scarier than you think. It looks like you're driving through hell. Like when go to certain parts and you see it on the news and I'm very disconnected. I'm like, wildfire, shut up. Like there's no fear like in my mind until you're driving through it and you're like, holy shit, like this is sort of crazy. There's fires sort of coming in from every angle here. And you just sort of get caught up in the smoke and it's pretty crazy.
Well, remember, and I've told this story before, so I won't get into it. When I was training for GSP, And I finished training. I looked at my phone and Rebecca's like, we are under evacuation orders. That was back in 2017. We came here and I was like, the wind's blowing the other way. So I went to sleep. I had a nap. Rebecca had a nap and we woke up like, shit, are we okay? But still, everything was fine. But anyway, enough of that. I can't wait to get into all this. UFC 254 at the fucking weekend. I had a UFC watch party at my house. So they were all here with film crews and stuff. But it was actually a great time. I was kind of dreading it. I thought it might have been awkward, you know, of filmers watching the fights, but it was fun. It was great. Fantastic cards. Of course, Khabib stole the show. We're going to get into all of that, but where I want to start is yesterday morning. I wake up, I'm in bed, I'm having my morning coffee. Same thing, you know, you scroll social media, going through it, you take a look, and I see Taito Uwase. Taito Uwase, as we know, he's a man's man. He likes a drink, and he's, you know, he's a bit of a wild man. Definitely a bit of a wild man. And he had a big win Saturday night, knocked out Stefan Struve. So congrats to him because he was in a tough spot. He needed that win big time. So I'm happy for him because he's a really fucking good dude. I don't know him that well, but, you know, we've had a fair few conversations. He's a fucking solid guy, just a normal dude. You know what I'm saying? So very, very happy for him. But then on Instagram, as I said yesterday morning, I'm scrolling. I see a video that I thought to myself, oh, he's going to regret that and he's going to delete that later. But I just checked this morning and God bless him, it's still there. Now, he may be on a flight from Abu Dhabi to Australia. Do you know what I mean? And maybe he deletes it when he lands, or maybe he just doesn't give a fuck. But Brian, roll the tape, please, my friend.
Firstly, I want to shout out to all my people from the area, Panthers! Wow, wow, wow. And also, I want to let you know, everyone, I woke up, I pissed the bed.
No, it goes on for a bit there, but yeah, you know, come on. When is a UFC fighter, everyone and that? Everyone, by the way, I pissed the bed. It's brilliant. Oh my God.
Oh, dude, that's so fucking funny. Yeah, he's not gonna, why would he delete it? Too late. Once it's on the internet, it's on the internet, and it's kind of funny. I mean, and you know, there's a level of confidence in a guy who'll just admit to something like that. I remember there was a friend of mine in high school who was a pretty good looking kid, and he would always fart in the face of girls in the lunchroom. And I always respected this kid because I was like, God damn it, this kid has some confidence. And the girl still liked him. Like, but in my head, I was like, I could never just fart at a chick. She would think I'm disgusting.
No, listen. He may have made you laugh. He may have been a bit of the clown, whatever, but I guarantee he was not getting laid.
He was getting laid.
Swear to God,
the girls love this kid. He would fart right in their mouth.
Girls do not love a guy that farts. Okay, loved it. And I tell you this: I fart in front of Rebecca all the time. She hates it. But it's like, what am I going to do? 21 years, I need to fart. It's my house. I pay the bills.
Does
I
she
work.
Ever? And then she's going to be furious if you answer this. Honestly,
never once. Rebecca has never farted in front of me ever.
Legitimately, or are you just saying that because you're trying to protect your marriage?
No, on my children's life. She's a lady. She's a lady. She has never farted once in 21 years.
Rebecca Bisping is the perfect woman. She's never farted, not once.
Never once. Never once. I swear to God.
Not even by mistake.
Never once. Okay? And we'll leave that conversation there. Let's get back to Taito Uwase pissing the bed. That's where this was supposed to go. Because at the end of the day, I watched it and I was like, I laughed my head off. And I thought, yeah, fair play. He's being honest. I mean, who hasn't pissed the bed at some point? Granted, I haven't done it in a long, 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 long time, but I feel like everybody at some point has gone out, drank too much, passed out, had a deep sleep because of the alcohol, and then woke up and thought, oh my God, what have I done? Granted, hasn't happened to me since I was about 16 years old. I'm now 41, so I've got 25 years of clean underpants, dry underpants, but still, come on, Lewis, don't tell me you haven't pissed the bed at some point.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I'm trying to remember.
Baby, get fucked.
As an adult, though, I don't know, even like in a drunken super, I don't think I have.
Can I just say bye to my son? He's leaving for the airport right now. Callum, love you, son. I'll give you a call. Sorry, mate, doing the podcast. Great seeing you, bud. Yeah, see you in 2 weeks. I'll give you a call after. Sorry about that, guys. Bye. Where were we? Pissing the bed. Brian, save me here because Lewis is too cool for school. Because I guarantee.
No, I mean, I wish I would have. I'm trying to remember the last time I pissed the bed.
I have seen you. I have seen the states you get in. Don't tell me you've never pissed a bed, Brian.
Well,
looking great this morning. The hair is down on full form. What are we saying? Are you a bed pisser?
Well, Gas Digital makes us wear diapers, so I'm good anyway. No bathroom breaks allowed.
But what about prior to Gas Digital? You know, in the Brian years, prime of his life.
I can't say that I ever pissed my bed as an adult. I can't. If I have, it was in a blackout. I can't remember.
Well, that's how it should be. Okay.
I short my pants twice a month. But that's not, you know, that's not pissing yourself. That's also not even like a drunken thing. That's just me having a bad diet. And sometimes you say, I'm going to go for a fart. And then
I'd rather piss my bed than shart, if I'm honest.
Well, come on. We all shart. There's no helping yourself.
I don't shart.
When's the last time you sharted?
I mean, it has happened, but
much more recently than when you pissed the bed.
Let's not fucking get into this. It's been the entire podcast just telling the world how disgusting we are. But when I was just talking about this to Callum, I said, what do you think? Should we talk about this? Because it's a bit gross. And then Rebecca was, you know, in the area and she pipes up. She goes, oh, I'll tell you when the last time you pissed the bed was. I said, when's that? When we moved into Nelson Street, this house we got together, we just got a brand new couch. I was only 19 or 20. Brand new couch. I think we'd had it one day. I fell asleep on the couch and peed the bed. Rebecca said she cried. Because, like, you know, you move into a new place, the new couch is like the piece de resistance, you know what I mean? Especially in England, because out here, couches come very quick. In England, the piece de resistance. Oh, very good, very good. It's actually a French saying, so piece de resistance. You know, you got to wait 2 months for the couch to show up. You're all excited. The couch comes. You're like, oh, great. I fall asleep on it. And yeah, there you go. Anyway, I think we'll leave that there.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You live, you learn.
Anywho, so there you go. Tied to Avasa. All right, let's just take a second to talk about our new sponsor, IP Vanish. IP Vanish is an incredibly important tool that will help you protect your privacy online. Now, I don't know how you spend your time online. What you do on there is none of my business and it's nobody else's. But if you don't want cyber criminals to steal your data or marketers to track what you're buying, you need IP Vanish, or perhaps hackers logging into your bank details and, you know, buying expensive luxury gifts with it. IP Vanish is a VPN or a virtual private network that creates a private connection from your computer, phone, tablet, whatever your device is, and it protects your identity and it encrypts your data.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, you don't have to be doing weird things online to use an IP. That's what I used to think when I used to hear about like hiding your IP address. No, this is for everybody now. Think about how often this is happening. You're talking about something with one of your friends, and then all of a sudden, you're being advertised that same exact product. Or you Google something. You're like, oh, I just want to find out about this. Then all of a sudden on Facebook or on Instagram, now they're advertising that product. You don't want all of these businesses using your data, sharing your data, and making money off your data. And in my opinion, that's the best reason why you should be using IP Vanish.
Yeah, absolutely. And with IP Vanish, your real IP address disappears, so you cannot be tracked. You get fast, unrestricted internet. IP Vanish has more than 1,500 servers in 70 countries. So with IP Vanish, you're never going to get stuck with a slow site or a video that doesn't load. But what really makes IP Vanish great is that it's the only VPN with 24/7 customer support. So let's be honest, if you're in China and you're trying to get a bit of porn, but it's not working, guess what, baby boy? Time difference doesn't matter. They are going to pick up the phone. Bottom line, a VPN is something everyone will be using soon enough. So please check out IP Vanish to start protecting your data and your privacy online. Lewis, tell them about the offer.
And here's the thing. It's already incredible. We don't even have to give you a discount. But of course, this is the Believe in Me podcast, and we constantly give back to our audience. That's probably a theme of this show. If you want to save 75% off their regular price, that is $3.25 per month. All you got to do is go to ipvanish.com/believe. That's ipvanish.com/believe, BELIEVE. 75% off the regular price. Just go to ipvanish.com/believe. Start protecting yourself and your online data today with IP Vanish.
Let's get into these fights, Lewis, because it was epic at the weekend. And I'm sure everybody, as much as they want to hear about you sharting and me pissing the bed and Taito Avasa pissing the bed, we got to talk about what happened at the weekend. You know, shout out UFC once again, just putting on another night of fantastic fights. But Khabib Nurmagomedov came in there. You know, I even picked Justin to win the fight. You know, I thought it was a bad matchup. You text me and said you wanted to change your pick.
You saying I did not want to change it, and I have evidence. It's very clear.
You can't change multiple times. I will allow you one change.
I never changed. I said I was thinking about changing, and you convinced me to not change because I, like a noob, I texted you about the weigh-in. And maybe you want to break this down because it is pretty interesting. This was pre-fight.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So Khabib, when he weighed in, he looked very drained. You know, there was some controversy. I guess Mike Dolce said, you know, Khabib missed weight, and he was talking about the way that he weighed in. It didn't go all the way over before they officially calculated the weight. So maybe you can give your opinion on that. But when I looked at Khabib, I was like, dude, he did look really drained and very unhappy. And I was like, maybe I'll change my pick. And then you just tore me a new one via text. You're like, you're an idiot.
No. So, of course, Mike Dolce inserts himself because that's what he does every time because he's a little fucking know-it-all. But I worked with him, and I didn't work with him for very long, leaving it there. But here's the thing. To any layman watching that, it does look like there's an argument for that he missed weight. However, there's one vital piece of information that only UFC fighters or cornermen or whatever would know, and that is quite simply this. You have to go through the UFC first, and the UFC check your weight preliminary. Now, of course, when you got on the old-fashioned scale, right, it does that, it goes up and that. If you're heavy, it's up. If you're light, it's down, right? Yeah. And it was trending up, and he didn't wait for it to settle and things like that. He just went, yeah, you're good. Boom, there you go, right? And you're right, that does give, you know, an argument for controversy there. It does. You can make an argument that he missed weight, and that's bullshit. And maybe there was a bit of bias going on, and he's very popular in that part of the world. So therefore, it's a scam and all this. No, that's nonsense. Because what happens is when you fight for the UFC, the morning of the weigh-in, when you say that you're on weight, you have to go and get weighed by the UFC first. Okay, some of the UFC staff members, they wear blue shirts, and they're in charge of all the logistics and the weigh-ins and all that type of things. If you need anything fight week, they're the guys to bring it to you. And you've got to go see them, and you get on a digital scale backstage, and you get on that scale. And if that digital scale doesn't say that the weight is where it needs to be, then they send you off and you got to go cut weight. So there's no way that Khabib stepped on that scale without going through the preliminary weight check backstage. That one there is for the commission and for the crowd and the journalists and all the rest of it. But you do a preliminary check backstage. So based upon that knowledge, I would say that this is all so bullshit. There's no conspiracy. There's no controversy there, if you ask me.
So, yeah, and that makes sense. When I said that I was going to change my pick to Khabib, you were like, dude, like Khabib always comes in and has trouble missing or making weight. He's always looks like he's drained before each fight. And that's why I didn't change my pick. I simply was testing the waters and prodding and wondering if I should change my pick. But the great Michael Bisping said, no, don't.
Well, yeah, listen, we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that off air. But you're right, you know, and I was right, okay. Should I say. Khabib always struggles to make weight. I mean, he pulled out of Tony Ferguson fights, I think, because he was hospitalized due to the weight cut. I think, am I right? Has he ever missed weight? I think he's missed weight on occasion as well.
I think he did once.
Yeah, and making 155 has never been easy for Khabib. So the fact he showed up like that, that was nothing new. And then after the fight, then we find out that fucking... not only had he lost his father before the training camp started, he had a broken foot and two broken toes. I mean, there is quite literally, you know, his foot was a balloon. That one really does work there. But when you find out that he had the tough weight cut, all the emotional problems, and then the fact he went in there injured as well, that makes you respect what Khabib did even fucking more. I mean, I looked at the scorecards after the fight. We'll get into the fight. But the thing that jumped off the page to me was that two judges gave Justin Gaethje the first round. And I thought that was just absolutely mind-blowing. But what do you think, Luce? You think he won the first round?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's mind-blowing. I understand that because Gaethje was landing heavier shots in the first round. Gaethje still lands heavier shots. Khabib got the takedown at the end of the first round, I believe. And I thought that was enough to give Khabib the round. Because also what I was surprised by was how good Khabib looked standing up. I mean, he doesn't land like Gaethje lands, but he was definitely hitting Gaethje much more than I thought he was going to hit him in the first round.
Yeah, well, if you look at how the scoring criteria works, pressure, octagon control, aggression, grappling, all those things favor Khabib. I mean, he was going forward like crazy, like a man possessed, of course, coming into this one. He wanted to honor his father. So he was a very, very charged up guy. He was doing well in the striking. Yes, he did eat a couple of shots from Gaethje. He did get his leg kicked quite several times, but he walked him down the whole time. He jabbed him, was landing some good shots, and he got the takedown. And he didn't just get the takedown at the end of the first round. Justin was essentially saved by the bell because he almost had an armbar locked in. Of course, he was defending the armbar. Obviously, if this is the arm that's going to get bent or broken, you grab your bicep and you do that, because then it can't be pulled through the arm. So he was defending, but Khabib's good. There's ways of getting around that, and Khabib knows how to do that. So the fact he was saved by the bell, I just thought was absolutely shocking that the judges gave him the first round. But Harrington, I know you're with us here somewhere. If you can show yourself and then give me your opinion as well.
Yeah, I'm here, Mike. So I put it in the chat. 23 of 36 was Justin Gaethje in the first round. 23 of 60 was Khabib in the first round.
What do you mean 23 of 60? What do you mean? 23 of what?
As far as shots thrown.
All right, so say that again. Now I have context of what you're actually saying.
Yes.
Can't just throw random numbers at me and go, 23 of 7? Okay, it sounds like a fucking game of football. Go on, carry on.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, Justin Gaethje was just significantly more accurate. I think he landed it at 63% versus...
Stop. Do you think Justin Gaethje won the first round was the question? Yes. You do? All right, yes. Okay. Because I don't. I think it's crazy. You don't think the fact he was almost armbarred at the end of the round, it was almost finished? That would have been the end of the fight.
If they landed the same amount of shots, right, but Gaethje was landing more accurately... All that means to me is that Khabib was more active. They still landed the same amount, and Khabib got the takedown at the end of the round. So that, I mean, that all that means is, I guess being more accurate, is that even a metric by UFC judging criteria, though? That guy was more accurate, so you're giving him the score? No, I think that's actually, it doesn't really mean much.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it does. That's a good question. But yeah, I don't think it would matter. Listen, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter anyway, because it wasn't a decision. It wasn't down to the judges. It was a finish. And in the second round, he went out there and he seemed to take it down very easy. As good as Justin's wrestling is, maybe I overestimated Justin's wrestling, or maybe I underestimated Khabib's, because I tell you fucking what, in round two, he just took him down whenever he wanted. There was almost no resistance. And that's not because Justin doesn't know how to. That's because of the timing of Khabib, the speed of Khabib. That finishing sequence when he shot in and got the double leg, then he turned the corner, took him down, then he took the back. I mean, it was so fast. Yeah. That was such high skill level, just absolutely unbelievable. And then Justin to defend goes to his back, which is classic, right? And then from there, he hits a mounted triangle. You don't see mounted fucking triangles on guys that level very often. And that just shows just how good Khabib really is, or really was, whichever one you want to use. But I think everyone in the entire world was shocked at how easily he went through Justin.
Including the referee, who just stood there in awe and watched him choke him unconscious.
I mean, that was... I was sitting there, everyone's going, what are you doing? He tapped.
He was looking right at him.
He tapped like 30 times. And like, you could make the argument that Jason Herzog was on the wrong angle. You know, maybe he was on the wrong side and he couldn't see. But no, he was right there. He was there. He was looking at it. And Justin's like, hey, save my life. I'm going to die. But
he couldn't have tapped anymore. He actually said, I quit in sign language.
Yeah, no, he did many, many times. But he's like, no, you're going to go to sleep. I'm going to make you look a fool. I'm going to show you being resuscitated to the entire world. But I got to say, though, on that note, fair play to Justin, how he handled it. And then he said afterwards, he said, hey, listen, I'd rather get choked out than knocked out. And he's absolutely right. You get choked out, you come back around a few seconds later, you're a little groggy, you know, and then you're good. You know, there's no long-term damage. You get knocked out, you know, there could be neurological issues. You could have a broken jaw, you know, you could be, and there's definitely like maybe a 6-month suspension or something like that, or 180 days. So yeah, for Justin, the best way to go out.
Justin, let me tell you something. Justin Gaethje, best case scenario, it happened like this. And I'll tell you why, because Khabib retires. And obviously we're going to talk about that in a second, but now Justin Gaethje, he's right there. I mean, he's the last guy to fight for the title. He went to sleep. Obviously he got finished, but at the same time, I mean, he is one. I mean, he might even be the next, he might just fight the next guy in line for the title. And that's the champion at this point. Justin Gaethje, you know, yeah, it sucks. Khabib is a one of a kind type of champion and a one of a kind type of athlete. No shame in losing to Khabib, especially if he ends up truly staying retired or never coming back completely undefeated. It's like, all right, dude, I was one of the guys. Nobody was ever able to beat this guy. There's a lot less shame in that. So Justin Gaethje, you know, he just has to jump right back on the horse, and he's not in a terrible position for his career at all.
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a second because what's his name? Michael Chandler had a good idea doing a lightweight tournament. Talk about that in a sec. But of course, Saturday night was dominated by Khabib. At the post-fight press conference, Dana came out, sat there and said, he's the GOAT. Simple as that. He's the greatest of all time, which has sparked a lot of debate online as to who the greatest of all time is. And again, here we go with this thing, which is just truly, it's a matter of opinion. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of opinion. But John Jones, who is definitely in everybody's conversation, maybe he is, maybe he isn't because of the steroids. You know what I mean? But either way, you know, John Jones' name has to be brought into the conversation. And he was not a happy camper on Saturday night. I don't know if you saw the tweets.
I did.
I don't know if we can bring any of those tweets up, but he was just going on and on and on that he was disrespected.
He was trying to be respectful at first. He was trying to be like, congrats, Khabib, but he was just like, he couldn't handle it. His ego got in the way.
Yeah, and then he came out and he was saying, you know, listen, I've worked so hard for 15 years. I've had, I forget how many title fights, 15 title fights. He said Khabib had fourth. That was his fourth world title fight. I've had 15 and I've won them all. And you're going to put Khabib in there before me. But you got to remember, John Jones tested what? Twice? Tested positive twice for steroids. And I don't know. What do you think? You think that takes you out of the conversation? I want to congratulate Khabib for an outstanding career. I know he made his father, along with millions of fans around the world, just incredibly proud today. God continue to bless him on his journey. That's not the tweet I was looking for, but it's very nice. And then it continues. You know, it went downhill from there, but then he was just a little pissed off that he wasn't getting the respect.
Yeah, I can actually pull up the tweets if you want. I think Harrington actually put them in that email.
Yeah.
So why don't I do that in the meantime? I mean,
we don't need to go through them all. He's just pissed off. He was just there Saturday night.
He went off on a little bit of a tirade and was like, you know, it's even ridiculous, blah, 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 blah. I mean, look, John Jones makes a point. If I'm John Jones, I completely understand that side of it. You know, but I think that that asterisk is enough. To take John Jones out of that number one spot. I'm sorry. You know, and look, it sucks, but let's get real. This is a fake fantasy thing. It's not real. It's like saying who's got the prettiest fucking unicorn. Who cares, John Jones? You're making a lot of money. You're going up the heavyweight. You're a bazillionaire. You're one of the most talented athletes in the world. Who really gives a shit? But you can't complain if you got caught using steroids a couple of times in your career, and you can definitely erase that. We've already forgiven John Jones. We already talk about him like he's in the pound-for-pound conversation. It's not like we're holding it over his head that much, but give Khabib his due. He's never been caught using steroids. He's a completely untarnished, perfect, unblemished record. You know, it's pretty goddamn impressive what Khabib did.
And he only lost two rounds throughout the entire course of his career. No controversy, no steroids, was never stripped. You got to remember John Jones, and you're right. If I'm John, I feel the same way. I'm like, what are you talking about? Have you forgotten what I've done over the last 10 years or so? You know, and what John Jones has done over the last 10 years is outstanding. But as you say, the asterisks are there and they are prevalent. They are big. They are glaring. They are glowing. They are shining like stars in the universe. The asterisks are there. You know what I mean?
John Jones looks up into the night sky. He doesn't see stars. He sees asterisks.
And Khabib just sees stars. You know what I mean? George St. Pierre just sees stars. Maybe should be a couple of asterisks. Who else? Henry Cejudo, Demetrius Johnson, lots of stars. Anderson Silva and John Jones, they're on another planet. They're looking at asterisks in the sky. That's what they look at, you know?
Yeah, dude, instead of planets, it's question marks. There's asterisks.
Question marks.
You know?
I mean, listen, when you talk pound for pound and then DC and John Anik at the weekend, they gave their little top five list. It's the same names, right? It's George St. Pierre, it's Anderson Silva, it's John Jones, it's Khabib, Demetrius Johnson. I would say they're your top contenders. Is there anybody that I'm missing? Brian or Harrington or Lewis, if you think of any, throw it my way. Henry Cejudo was in there. DC is an honorable mention as well. But if you had to go through all them, Lewis, who would be your one?
Right now?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say it has to be Khabib. Khabib has to be number one pound for pound, completely undefeated. There's, you know, there's a real case to make for Adesanya. We talked about that after his last performance. Real incredible.
Yeah.
I think he still needs a few more big wins. He needs to show the same type of dominance that we've seen from Khabib, from John Jones, even Anderson Silva in his heyday. You know, he's just there. But I can see Adesanya coming into that role. John Jones needs to, honestly, he needs to erase, and I think we've said this, he's doing it with the heavyweight move. He needs to erase that memory of those asterisks. And once he does that, and I think he can, it's not that crazy. We forgive in the sport, right? Just this is the way that people are just in general. Everyone's very fair weather. But I think that the unblemished record of Khabib, the fact that he was the way he's dominated everybody, the way he went out on top, what a fucking baller move. Nobody does it. Everyone says they want to do it. Nobody does it.
Because everybody does want to do that. Everybody talks about it. And it's so alluring to stay when you're at the top because obviously the earning potential. It's like at the weekend, I was listening to Howard Stern and Matthew McConaughey was saying that there was a phase in his acting period where he didn't want to do romantic comedies anymore. And he was known as the guy that wanted to do romantic comedies. And he called his agent and said, I'm never doing a romantic comedy again, okay? And then sure enough, an offer for a romantic comedy came in at $8 million. And he said no. And they came back at $10 million, right? And he said no. And they came back at $12 million. And he said to his agent, listen, I'm never doing a romantic comedy again. And then they came back at $14.5 million. And he still turned it down. Now, fighting and acting are not the same fucking thing, but still, Khabib left a lot of money on the table there, much like Matthew McConaughey. Think of all the starving children that could have fed. Selfish bastard, you might say. But no, he was going after the stars. Sorry, I mean the asterisk. For me,
that Khabib is the Matthew McConaughey of MMA.
It's the Matthew McConaughey. All right. What is that?
I love them high school girls. They get older. I stay the same age.
All right. Okay. Greatest of all time. It's either Khabib or George St. Pierre. Khabib. He went out on top. He was unbeaten. He only ever lost two rounds in his entire career. And I don't think we'll ever see him fight again either, by the
way. And I don't even know why I didn't think about George, but it's interesting you bring him up. He's just too inactive. I almost feel like if George just stayed in the sport, he would be right there. Because having losses in your career, I don't think that it means that much, especially if you avenge them. Because George avenged his two losses. I mean, not only avenge them, but avenge them and then some. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like he put a beat down on Matt Serra. He went and finished Matt Hughes. Essentially, in a weird way, I respect the guy who avenges the loss more than the guy who's never tasted defeat.
Yes, and that's great, and it's all well and good, and it is a beautiful story, and it is good, but the fact remains that Matt Hughes did still kick his ass and armbar him, and nobody kicked Khabib's ass.
Didn't
you know what I'm saying?
Didn't kick his ass. Matt Serra beat the shit out of Matt Serra.
No. Matt Hughes beat him, kicked his ass, took him down. However your parameter of getting your ass kicked, if I get picked up, slammed, and then someone takes fucking arm bars me, right? You got finished, mate. You got your ass kicked. No, I was going to say, I don't know what your parameters of getting your ass kicked, you know what I mean? But if you get picked up, slammed, beaten up a little bit, and then armbarred, come on, you were finished. That's getting your ass kicked.
If memory serves, George won that round. He did lose, he got armbarred with 1 second left in the round.
It doesn't matter. He got fucking finished, Lewis. It doesn't, it's like, he's trying to make an argument. Oh, Khabib, Justin kind of won that fight. He kind of, because I mean, let's be honest, he won round one, and he was doing okay in round two until he got choked out fucking unconscious. Okay, Lewis, I get your point. He was doing all right. Yeah, but he got fucking armbarred. Okay, as simple as that. He got finished. But it's Khabib. It's Khabib. He ends up on top. He finishes on top. He retires on top. He's the champion. He's walking away one of the biggest stars in the sport. And I just thought it was beautiful. I mean, the man has so much honor, you know, and he gets a lot of respect for his fighting ability, but he deserves a lot of respect for the honor that he has and the type of person that he is. I mean, obviously, you know, he was out there fighting for his father's memory, but then he said he made a promise to his mother that he's going to stop fighting. And he did it, and he retired as champion, you know, and I don't think we'll ever see him again. I don't think he's going to break a promise to his mother. Who knows, though? Maybe they get skinned. Maybe they fucking treat everybody to those kind of wigs in Dagestan and they're broke, and he comes and fights. Don't think that's going to happen, but you never know.
Maybe him
it's
and his
a crazy world.
Falling out, and he's like, you know what? I'm sick of this shit. I'm going back to fighting.
Yeah. But let's not get into disrespecting Khabib's mother. I feel like it won't end well for anybody.
I was disrespecting Khabib. Don't worry. Not his mom. I would never.
Don't disrespect Khabib.
But here's the thing, what I'll say, and you got to give credit to the UFC here. I shouldn't say the UFC, maybe the UFC audience. I don't even know who to give credit for here, but it was an interesting thing because Khabib is a very, very proud Muslim. And I think the perception of the mixed martial arts audience, especially in the United States, is like this, you know, almost like, you know, simpleton, we like cage fight in America. And to what, I mean, there's none of that with Khabib. I don't see anybody, you know, hating on Khabib's culture. I see everyone being extremely respectful. I see everyone being very accepting. Mixed martial arts is truly a melting pot of cultures. It's rare you see it in today's culture where everyone's at each other's throats. If you don't vote this way, you don't believe this. I mean, people just fucking hate each other. And you have an organization in the UFC where one week they're, you know, their fighters are going out at Trump rallies. The next week they have Khabib, who's a proud Muslim, retiring in the cage, and fucking everyone around the world shows him this level of respect. The next week you have Tyron fighting and he's fighting for Black Lives Matter. And no one cares. Everyone goes, you know what? They're martial artists. They get into the cage. We love the sport of fighting, and we all sort of let the bullshit go away. Like, I don't give a fuck what people, somebody's voting for in the cage. I want to see the best fight possible. And I thought it was pretty interesting in today's culture. It's rare you see that anymore. And
well, at the end of the day, that's not what people are tuning in for. They're not tuning in because the guy's a Muslim. I mean, maybe that's what initially, you know, put Khabib on their radar or whatever, but you tune into the UFC to see great fights. And ultimately, once they're in there, you know, and the referee says fight, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, what your religion is, what you believe. You know, if you believe you go to heaven or you die, or there's asterisks in the sky or stars in the sky, it doesn't fucking matter, because at the end of the day, when that referee says bring it on, come on, Steve Mazzagatti in the house, then it's fucking action, simple as that. And it's down to them, and whatever they've said, you know, they've got to live up to those words. But anyway, we'll leave that one there. Congrats, Khabib Nurmagomedov. Just incredible.
All right, Mike, real quick, let's take a quick second and thank Omigo Bidet, which is an incredible sponsor for this show, an incredible product altogether. If you guys aren't using a bidet, you are, what are you living in, the Stone Ages? What are you, a caveman? It's very simple. It shoots a stream of water up your butt. It's a cleaner way to do it. You don't have to use toilet paper. You don't have to use wipes. You save money. You save time. It's a cleaner, more civilized way to do it. The Bispings in both Asia and Europe have been doing this for centuries, essentially.
Yeah, but listen, I just want to say, if you don't know about bidets, doesn't mean you're a caveman, Lewis. It just means they're not with the times. It means they don't care about the forest. They don't care about the environment. And they don't care about their wallet, because this will save you money ultimately. I don't own any toilet paper. Okay, that sounds weird. It sounds gross. But no, because as we've talked about it many times, I get cleaned by a robot. I get dried by a robot. I don't have to touch anything. It's great.
It's funny because Halloween is this weekend. Usually I throw toilet paper in the trees of my neighbors. I'm throwing Omigo bidets, actually. It's a new thing
that
we're
doing. Careful. You might get a lawsuit, because, you know, if you hit a kid in the head with an Omigo bidet, I think I could kill a kid with an Omigo bidet. I reckon if I threw it hard enough, I might kill a kid. But listen, at the end of the day, you do want to try this. As I say every time, there's different models. There's the starter model, takes 2 minutes to install. I'm shit with my hands. I say that every time, but it's true. Even I installed it. That's very, very cheap. And then you go up in increments, of course. And then you have the granddaddy one, which is what I have upstairs. Callum has the easy one downstairs for the guests. We got the cheap one, you know, but check it out. Go to Omigo.com. You won't be disappointed. I promise you, if you try this out, it will change your world or change your life, or at very least, it'll change your toilet pooping habits. It won't change your life, but it will change the way you take a shit, and you will realize that in the past it was kind of gross. So yeah, look, listen, I love this thing. All you got to do, get involved, go to myomigo.com/BYM. You'll get 15% off. Take a look at the website. As I say, there's different price points. They start very, very cheap, and then they get a little more luxurious, but you will find one that fits your budget. MYOMIGO. myomigo.com/BYM. You're going to get 15% off. All right. That does leave us, Lewis, without a UFC lightweight champion. And, you know, a champion must be crowned. Of course, there's a big fight coming up with Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. Dana was asked about that at the post-fight press conference, if that's going to be next. And Dana said, I don't know. We haven't got that far. He just fucking retired 5 minutes ago. You know, let me speak to the team and we'll figure it out. But Michael Chandler, obviously former Bellator champ, now with the UFC, he was out there. If you recall, he was supposed to be the stand-in in case either guy couldn't make it to the octagon. He's saying a four-man tournament which sounds good, but who would be in that four-man tournament? I'm assuming he wants to be in it, you know what I mean? But I don't know if he necessarily deserves to be in the four-man tournament. I think Poirier, McGregor, Justin, possibly Chandler. Who else is in the what's it called?
Yeah, pull up the rankings.
The rankings, yeah, UFC rankings. I should have done this earlier, been prepared, but I didn't. UFC rankings, hold on. Bear with me, guys, 1 second.
I no offense to Michael Chandler. I think he should get a win in the UFC before we talk about, you know.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I mean, this is how recent it is. They've still got Khabib as the champion. Well, he is the champion. But then you got Gaethje, Poirier, Ferguson, McGregor. Yeah, see, Ferguson deserves that as well. So I think it should be, but saying that you just had Justin versus Ferguson, nobody wants to see that again just now. Then it's Dan Hooker, Charles Oliveira, Paul Felder.
A fact, Conor and Dustin, winner of that fight's getting the title. And in a weird way, like, I get it, you know. Look, you can't, I mean, Gaethje just lost in the second round, was stopped. You know what I'm saying? Ferguson just lost to Gaethje. The guy was just stopped at the champion in the second round. I think you need to put a little distance between that before you strap a title around one of their waists.
Absolutely. Nobody wants to see that.
To put a title around Conor's waist, it's only going to get more people to tune in. Mm. And the best guy will beat him if there's a better guy, right? So it doesn't hurt to make the winner of Dustin versus Conor the champion.
I think ultimately that's probably what the UFC will do, because as we just showed there, if they were to do a four-man tournament, or just let's not call it a four-man tournament, let's just say who emerges as the next contender or whatever over the next few months, but it doesn't do the UFC good to not have a champion. You know what I'm saying? And I'll be honest, you know, in terms of anybody, Poirier and Conor, they're both right there. They are ranked. Well, Dustin's 2. Where's Conor? I don't see him in the rankings. He's not in the rankings at lightweight.
He hasn't fought at 155 in a while.
Yeah, he's not even in the rankings. But still, you know, come on. If he gets one win, he's probably 1 or 2. So, yeah, I think that'll be for the belt. The UFC, Dana said he doesn't know yet, and maybe they won't. But more than likely, Poirier versus Conor. Harrington, you sent me a little... you said that Conor was tweeting at the weekend and then deleting tweets. I didn't see it. I don't know anything about it. But what was he talking about, Harrington?
Yeah, so he was not very complimentary about Justin Gaethje's performance. Let me look up the exact wording of the tweets here. Dustin KO'd you as well. Your wrestling/grappling and overall fear of the central positions being truly embarrassing tonight, Justin.
Mm. And he deleted that, you say?
Deleted it almost immediately after posting it.
Oh, really? So how long was it up there? And how do you know this? Do you like staring at Conor McGregor's Twitter feed?
Yeah, dude, I refresh it every 30 seconds just for my own personal. No, it was Middle Easy reported this. They, I guess, screenshotted immediately.
Oh, they're like a bit of controversy, those guys. All right. Well, you know, bit of a dick move, but whatever. All's fair in love and war. You know, if Justin was talking shit about Conor, which he was, Justin was talking a lot of shit about Conor, saying, I forget what the quotes were, but he wasn't saying nice fucking things. So fair enough. If somebody talks mad shit about me or talks mad shit about you, Lewis, it's just human nature. If you see them get their ass kicked, you go, ha ha, look at you, you fool. Right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, those guys, they might end up fighting at one point. It's actually likely that they're going to end up fighting at one point now, especially if Conor decides to come back to 155 pounds. And not for nothing, he should. If now that Khabib's gone, Conor McGregor, you know, any given Sunday, Conor could beat anybody in that division. You know, even what's kind of funny is we were all like, God damn, dude, I was buying the Justin Gaethje hype. And that's sort of a mean way to put it. It's not that I was buying the hype. I was really torn on whether or not Khabib or Justin could beat Khabib. I was like, damn, dude, it was hard for me to pick Khabib in that fight. And after seeing how dominant Khabib was, I almost want to be like, was I really just giving Justin much more credit? Or once again, you posed that question before, is it that Khabib is just that much better than everybody else?
Well, here's the thing. Saturday at my house, Jason Perillo was here, obviously a very, very good coach, you know, and he knows the fight game. He has a great mind for it. Not like many people have. And he said, listen, he said, Justin Gaethje is not that good. He said, he just fought Tony Ferguson. And this isn't my words. Okay. He said, Tony Ferguson fucking sucks. He said, this is what he said. He said, Tony Ferguson fucking sucks and Justin outboxed him. So now everybody thinks fucking Justin's great, but he's not that great. That the words of the great Jason Perillo, not the words of the great Michael Bisping. Okay. Just disclaimer, Tony, before you come to my house and stab me. So yeah. And I was like, well, you do have a point because Tony is he's very hittable. I remember when he fought Lando Venata, Lando took that fight on short notice and pieced Tony up. Tony has built a career on weathering the storm, getting his ass kicked, and then they get tired and then he takes them out. And that's where he wins the majority of his fights, which isn't, you know, good for a long-term career in mental health. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but still, a lot of people get credit for like being in wars. You're like, oh, he's always in a war. You know, same thing. Justin Gaethje's like, he's known as always being in a war. Dustin Poirier, always in a war. But I overall, I think you want to be in wars. You want to never get hit. You want to be
absolutely dominant.
You want to be Khabib. You want to be GSP. You want to be the guy who can fucking, you know.
In boxing, the principle is simple: hit and not get hit, and that crosses over to mixed martial arts. The same thing. You don't want to. It's fun to be in wars. Like when I fought Anderson Silva, I was kind of glad afterwards. I said to Prill, I said, "Oh, I'm glad it went that way. I had to fight through some adversity. There was a great storyline. Yada yada yada." But ultimately, you do want to go in there and not really get hit. You don't want to have a broken nose. You don't want 30 stitches in your face, and you don't want to be losing brain cells. You know what I mean? It's fun for the viewer, but you want to go in there, keep your faculties about you, keep your guard high, chin down, and win the fight without any drama. That's what you're looking for.
No, you could have taken 2-3 more of those knees.
Oh, easy. You know, the only thing is, if they made Conor versus Poirier, I don't know, because he's not ranked at lightweight, so how do you do that? But still, everybody knows he was the former lightweight champ. So, yeah, I think more than likely.
Fourth in the UFC lightweight rankings.
Well, I'm looking on UFC.com right now, motherfucker, and he's not there, Harrington. So, you know.
Yes, he's mouthing the words, fuck Michael Bisping. Is that what you said? Okay. Weird. It's a weird position to take on Bisping's show. I apologize.
Weird position to take. And to say that, he's ranked number 4. Look, UFC rankings. There's no Conor McGregor there right now. Okay, Harrington. Explain yourself, Harrington. What the fuck are you doing contradicting me?
Shaking his head, yes.
I just saw it when you put it up there for a second, Mike. It's Gaethje number 1, Poirier 2, Ferguson 3, McGregor 4.
It is. You're right. I don't know. I didn't see that. Do you know what? Because I just expected his name to be near the top and it wasn't. I'm like, oh, he's not even there. What kind of loser is number 4? Okay, fair enough, Harrington. Fair enough, buddy. Fair enough. I will eat my humble pie and choke on it later. Anyway, fair play. So there it is. Khabib, the Eagle era is done. It is over. It is finished. And we'll find out what's going to happen with that. Pretty soon, I would have thought UFC will announce something. So that'll be kind of interesting to find out which way they go. Of course, other fights on the card as well. Co-main event, Jared Cannonier taking on Robert Whittaker. Adesanya said that he was keeping an eye on Cannonier because he wanted him to win because he would give him a title fight next. We had Jared on the show. He was very confident and he had every reason to be confident. He was on coming off the back of 3 good wins, Anderson Silva, Jack Hermanson and David Branch. He said he had harnessed the power of the universe. He felt like a god in the flesh. You know, he was cooking with gas, but unfortunately it wasn't his night in there. Robert got off to a great start right from the get-go. He looked like the faster guy. He was the slicker guy. You know, speed kills, and he was just way faster. Excellent footwork in and out. You know, just a beautiful, solid performance. And that combination, it's like a screw punch to a right head kick. It's kind of like a jab, but it comes up. Some people call it an up jab. Some people call it a screw punch. He throws that and then the head kick. And that first kick, apparently Jared said, that broke his arm in the first round. Obviously, you don't want to be breaking your arm in the first round, but that's not the only reason he got beat. Whittaker was just too good, too fast, too experienced, and ultimately just too good, you know? So it's nice to see Robert back in winning ways. What did you think of the fight, Lewis?
I thought it was a great fight. It was fun. I found myself rooting for Cannonier a little bit just because he's a friend of the show. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was close. It wasn't like it was a one-sided dominant performance. It felt like a pretty close fight. I didn't even know that he broke his arm in the fight.
I mean, it was pretty close-ish. It was close to the point where, well, it went to a decision and Jared definitely landed some shots and kept Whittaker honest. But I think, and I haven't seen the scorecards, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't a clear 10-9 every round for Whittaker. It was definitely a shutout. You know, Jared's got nothing to be embarrassed about, of course. You know what I mean? He hasn't been training that long, I don't think. You know, so he went out there against one of the best in the world, got beat, former champion, zero shame, and he gave a good account of himself. He did look dangerous on occasion. He landed a couple of good shots, but that night was all Whittaker.
Yeah, it's weird because it doesn't seem like Whittaker is in talks for a rematch against Adesanya.
Well, it's not just that. He doesn't want to be. Because he was asked about it at the post-fight press conference.
What he said? I didn't see the post-fight press conference.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's... you got to love the attitude of Robert Whittaker. He's such a fucking G, man. He's so... This is the thing about Australians, for the most part. They're very, very laid back. And he was like, you know, in his typical affable fashion, like, you know, he said, our paths will cross again. He said, I'm not screaming out for that right now. You know, I said, I'm not screaming out for that right now, but our paths will cross again. And whether we fight in the octagon or whether we fight on a pub car park somewhere, he said, I'm going to fight that guy again one day, but I'm not asking for it right now. You know, and I think that's smart. Even though Dana said as well at the post fight that he thinks Whittaker is probably next for Adesanya, even though Adesanya has a lot of options, obviously John Jones going up to light heavyweight, all that type of stuff. And by the way, to your point earlier, I do think Adesanya, with one or two more wins, will be in contention for greatest of all time, for sure, if he carries on fighting the way he is. But Robert was like, you know, it's very humble to say. He's like, not yet. Not yet. Maybe a little too soon. When he fought Darren Till, that was, if you will, getting his mojo back against a very tough opponent in Darren Till. Then he goes out against Jared Cannonier and gets a good, solid, clear-cut victory. The Till fight was close. Cannonier fight, clear-cut victory. Now he's, you know, he's got his swag back.
Who else is ahead of him, though? I mean, it's fine to get his swag back, but who else is ahead of him for a title fight?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, but now he's got his swag back, you know, because in the first fight, when you come back from getting knocked out, it's hard. There's a lot of mental demons, you know what I mean? So he got over that. Now he's beat Jared. He's got his swag back. And you're right, to your point, I don't think there's anyone ahead of him. Do you know what I mean? So you can't go, oh, give me number seven, but or maybe they will to keep him busy. I don't know. You know, and to be honest, I don't know if the public, and maybe they are. I mean, I'd watch it, I'd buy it, you know what I mean? But maybe it is a little too soon. I don't know. What do you think?
He's ranked number one right now, middleweight. Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's a weird position to be in, to be ranked number one, just come off beating the number two guy, and then go, you know what? I'm not really ready right now. You are the former champion. This is with all due respect, because he's incredible. But at the same time, you just don't want to hear it. As a fan, I don't want to hear that. Even if he believes it, maybe behind closed doors, all I want to hear is that he can go and fucking kill any man in front of him, including Israel Adesanya. So it is just a bizarre thing. It makes me go, goddamn, how much better is Israel Adesanya? Because what is he going to do? He's going to go back to the drawing board, get better, learn more. That's fine, but Israel Adesanya is also going back to the drawing board, getting better, learning more, expanding as a martial artist. So is there ever a time where Robert Whittaker catches up to Israel Adesanya? I don't know. I think Israel Adesanya is only going to become that much better with time. Now that he's got all the money, the training partners, he's got the championship belt, it's a different level when you're at the very top.
Yeah, okay, let me bring up the UFC ranking so that what's-his-face Harrington can make a fool out of me again. But where's middleweight, lightweight, middleweight, flyweight? Hold on, where's middle? There it is, middleweight, okay. Yeah, Whittaker's number one. Below that, Jared Cannonier just beat him. Paulo Costa, Jack Hermanson. Hermanson's fighting Till, Yoel Romero. Well, Whittaker had two wars with Romero, beat him twice, no need to fight him. Paulo Costa, that's an interesting fight. That's an interesting fight. See, here's the thing, right? Paulo Costa just got his ass kicked and didn't show up for the fight against Adesanya whatsoever. But that's because Adesanya was so good, right? That's not a disrespect to Adesanya. He was so good. Costa shit his pants, right? But Costa coming back, he's got a lot to prove. And we know normally he's a marauder. He's a brawler. He goes forward and swings like a motherfucker. And he's a big, hard motherfucker. So in his next fight, you got to guarantee that Paulo Costa is going to bring it, right? So if you're Robert Whittaker, what do you want? Do you want to go up against Paulo Costa, who on form, on his night, is a dangerous motherfucker? Or do you want to go up against Adesanya, who, you know, if you beat him, it's for everything. It's all the chips. It's the fucking world title. I don't know. You know what I mean? If I'm him, I say, fuck it, give me the belt.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say give me the belt. It's kind of weird because Israel Adesanya, it reminds me of the position that Anderson Silva was in when he came into the UFC. And he just decimated Rich Franklin. He just beat up everybody in front of him. It was like, I think it was Travis Luter won the Ultimate Fighter. He ended up getting a title shot. It was almost like there's nobody that's beating him. And then I feel like Israel Adesanya is in that position because Israel Adesanya with massive competition right now could be one of the biggest stars in the world. But if he's just beating guys that he's already beaten, I feel like people aren't going to get as excited to watch him. So Israel's sort of in a weird position. He's almost too good to capitalize on sort of where he's at in the UFC.
Yeah, yeah, but he's kind of a victim of circumstance, because I agree with what you're saying. You know, you don't want to see the same guy beating the same guys over and over again, but you need solid contenders. And the guy that he just beat has proven to be the cream of the crop, and he's right back there. And how long ago is that, Harrington? Just look it up while we talk. I'm not sure. When did they fight? It wasn't that long ago. What, maybe a year, something like that. But still, I don't know. You know, I mean, we'll see what the UFC do. They'll figure out something good. But I guarantee Robert Whittaker doesn't fight Adesanya next. It'll be Paulo Costa, because that's just a great matchup. Stylistically, those two, I think they match up very well. Costa's going to come back and try and be, you know, a bit of a fucking nut job. Or it could be Kelvin Gastelum. Kelvin Gastelum's there as well. You know, Whittaker and Gastelum were supposed to fight a couple of times. So you never know. There's that out there as well. So, yeah. But still, Robert Whittaker. When you coming on the show, motherfucker? We've spoke about it a few times. We'll try and get him on for Thursday. But Robert, you're the man. Congrats, buddy. Absolutely maybe, fantastic.
Maybe Israel, the move for him, while the middleweight division is sort of figuring itself out right now, is to just take a fight at 205, right? Because yeah. That's what Anderson did. Remember, he went up, he fought Stephen Bonner. He fought Forrest Griffin. He had a few fights against big names at 205.
Yeah, there's another one as well. I forget. He dropped him with one punch, caught the kick. I forget his name now. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that super fight with John Jones is always there. And every time you fight, you run the risk of losing. And if he gets beat, that fight is off the table. You know what I mean? So if I'm Adesanya, that's actually not a bad idea, Lewis. You know what I mean? I'm going to take credit for
honestly,
it.
Honestly, beating somebody with a big – who would be the guy? Big name at 205 – it's not necessarily somebody who's going to be in title contention, because you sort of, they don't want to lose their opportunity by losing to 185 pounder. So it almost has to be somebody that's like,
where's John Jones? Just John. They're the two that have been going back and forth for fucking ever, getting very personal, talking a lot of shit. I mean, that's the fight. It's John Jones Adesanya. Whilst you let the middleweight division figure themselves out, let a clear cut contender emerge. And as we just said, that probably is Robert Whittaker already. But still, you know, as you said, it's not that sexy to fight him again. John Jones, there you go.
All right, real quick, Mike, we must thank Crossrope for sponsoring today's show. Crossrope, what an incredible sponsor of the show. We're all trying to get in shape right now. Harrington should probably credit Crossrope for all the weight that he's lost. I think he's down like 30 pounds or so. Crossrope is a fun and innovative way that you can lose weight, build muscle, have fun while you're doing it. Bisping, you are a former professional athlete. Skipping rope is something that every mixed martial artist and boxer does.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't have to be a boxer or a combat sports athlete. It's just a great all-round workout. It really is. It works for all of you. And it's also good for mind and body coordination. Whenever I'm jumping rope, it's good because, you know, when you first start, you suck, but then you get a little feedback and you start doing better. Then you start doing some fancier moves. Then you go faster. You do a little cross rope. You do. I mean, that's why it's called cross rope. But there is also different weighted handles. So as you progress and you get a little bit stronger, you change the handles nice and fast. You get a full body workout in just 30 minutes at home or anywhere. I mean, half of the gyms are closed. In fact, 75% of gyms are closed these days, but all you need is a jump rope. You don't need a luxurious garage setup like Lewis. You know, he's got the plush, he's got the MMA gym, he's got the sauna, he's got whole setup, you know, but, you know, us mere mortals, we can all get a cross rope and we can all jump and we all get a workout.
The coolest thing of all of this is once you get cross rope, you also get access to their app, which has tons and tons of workouts, a program to track all of your progress as well. It has never been easier and more fun to get back in shape. And we have a pretty incredible deal for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Also on the app, though, I just want to say you can choose between different workouts. There's the Get Lean, there's the Get Strong, et cetera, et cetera. It depends on your goals. What do you want to achieve? Do you even have any goals? If you don't have any goals, I suggest you get some. But as Lewis said, all you got to do is go to crossrope.com/believe, B-E-L-I-E-V-E, crossrope.com/believe. You get $40 off and free shipping. Where were we? Moving on. Third fight of the night from the top. Walt Harris taking on Volkov. Fuck, man. I shouldn't say this as a UFC commentator, but I wanted Walt Harris to get the job done. I really did, for multiple reasons. Number one, he's just one of the coolest fucking guys you'll ever meet. If you hang out with Walt Harris or you talk to him and you just come into his presence for 5 seconds, very, very warm energy, nice guy, super respectful, high energy, a lot of fun, good sense of humor, and obviously a tremendous fighter when he fought Alistair Overeem in his last fight. You know, he almost finished Overeem, but his lack of experience really bit him in the ass, and Overeem being very experienced turned it around. But of course, you know, the elephant in the room, let's not forget, you know, he's Anaya Blanchard, his stepdaughter, was was unfortunately murdered last year as well, and he bounced back from that. That just terrible adversity. So whenever someone goes through like that, you're gonna have to be an asshole not to root for them, you know. But all that aside, the best man won on the night. The better man won, and that's what you want in mixed martial arts. You know, you say he's great. I'm a fan of him, but may the best man win. And yeah, unfortunately for Walt Harris on Saturday night, and that was a tough matchup for him. But I was going to say Saturday night Volkov, he was sharp, he was fast, he's tall, he's got a long reach, he's an expert striker, and you know, he was just a better guy. And the finishing sequence, the front kick to the stomach, right? And this is what I was trying to explain to Jason on Saturday. There's two types of front kicks, right? There's a front push kick, or as some people in Thai call it, a teep. That's a push kick. They don't hurt, right? You get, you know, a little smack on the stomach and it might knock you back 5-10 feet. And it can look a little embarrassing to people that don't know, but they don't hurt. They don't. We're fucking professional fighters. We're used to getting a little bit of impact on our body. Yeah. Or you got the front snap kick, right? The Maigeri, which is a karate style, Shotokan karate. They do it fantastically. I've trained with some of those guys. And they fucking, they pull the toes back and the ball of the foot really slams into your solar plexus or wherever they choose to kick you. The front, the teep is the entirety of the foot, which pushes you back. The snap kick is just the ball of the foot just pierces you and it fucking hurts like hell. And that's what Volkov got Walt Harris with. And you saw it straight away, the look on Walt Harris's face. He was done the moment that connected.
Yeah, it's weird because you're right. It was sort of like, it's the type of shot where you don't want to lose. You just don't want to lose to like a front kick like that. It just doesn't look great. But the impact must have been incredible. Getting hit in the body, it's just a different thing. Explain the difference between being hit in the body and being hit in the head, because I've been hit in the fucking body. You just, every bit of your air gets sucked out of you and you're just like, there's no standing. It's just, you're done. There's no option. From a fighter's perspective, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, for the most part, and I'm not trying to sound tough, for the most part, when you get punched in the face, it doesn't hurt that much. You know what I mean? There's a couple of scenarios, a few different scenarios when you get hit in the head, right? If you get caught with a really good one, you get knocked out. Well, then, you know, needless to say, you're fucking unconscious. You know nothing about it. And they don't really hurt unless you've got a broken jaw or a broken nose afterwards. But generally you're knocked out, your conscious comes back and you're good. Then you get the way you get hit in the head and you hear, I remember I had a good few of those and you don't know where the fuck you are. When I fought Akiyama, UFC 110 or fuck 120, UFC 120, Yoshihiro Akiyama, fight started and he just came out with a huge overhand right, connected. And all I heard, this high pitched thing. And I was like, ding. And you can't fucking, you don't know where you are. You're like, what is going on? And then, you know, you get on your back foot, you backpedal a bit, and then slowly but surely your faculties come back to you. You can get caught in the nose. Obviously, when you get punched in the nose, it hurts. Your eyes fucking start watering. It stings like a motherfucker. Or sometimes you get caught on the side of the head or the chin or whatever, and you don't really feel it. And it's not too bad. You know what I'm saying? But a good body shot, some body shots don't register because you got to get the right spot. You got to get the sweet spot. You got to get the liver. You got to get the solar plexus, or you got to get them when they're breathing in, right? Because like, I can tense my stomach and say to someone, here, punch me in the stomach as hard as you can. And as long as I breathe out on impact, it doesn't really hurt that much. But if you just happen to be breathing in as you get caught with the shot, oh, you're fucked. You're on your knees. And until that moment passes, until the blood or whatever the fuck it is, the scientific nature of that shot, what it does to your internal organs, until that, you know, corrects itself, you're not fighting. You're not getting back on your feet. You're certainly not, you know, you're losing that fight, shall we say.
Worst body shot you've ever taken in a fight. Do you remember?
No, I don't really think I got bothered with body shots too much in a fight. I'm lucky. Hey, I'm not saying I never had my ass kicked. Of course I did. But yeah, I don't think... I mean, certainly when you get kicked in the stomach as well, same thing, it hurts. You know, you kind of get on your back foot. But you've got to have those mind games. You've got to say to your... You've got to pretend to your opponent you're not hurt. Because if you show that you react to the body shot, they're like, oh, we're going right back there. But of course, if you go to the well too many times, then you're going to get countered. But yeah, there you go. But still... Walt Harris kicked in the stomach there, and I felt for the guy. But at the same day, at the same time, Volkov was the better man on the night, and he deserved to win that fight. So congrats.
Yeah, I mean, Walt Harris having, you know, a much rougher year than I think probably almost any other fighter could imagine. Two in a row. I don't think he's in a position where he's going to lose his job. Obviously, number one, he's in the UFC heavyweight division, which is, you know, a little bit thinner of a division historically than others. Number two, he's got a pretty big name. And number three, I think the UFC, I think they realize that he's down on his luck right now. But what do you think he should do at this point?
Yeah, listen, I mean, unfortunately, you know, he's in the UFC and it's tragic what happened to him. And it's every parent's worst nightmare, you know, and I spoke about this because I commentated his fight against Overeem, you know, and I spoke about it then. I'm just having the mental fortitude to get out of bed and go and fucking train because getting ready for a fight. I mean, you know now, Lewis, you know, you're old hat in this world, but you know, to go through a high-level training camp is hard enough, let alone going through something like that. So I was like, the fact he's here, he's made it here, and he's in shape, and he's ready to fucking fight is just incredible in itself. And then he went up against Alistair Overeem, one of the best heavyweights on the planet, the most experienced, and probably one of the most decorated heavyweights we've ever seen. So there was no shame in that. Volkov, again, no shame there. Excuse me. And I know he's not in danger of getting cut at all. But two things to say on that. Number one, that's because he doesn't deserve to be cut, right? He almost had Overeem beaten, you know, and then his inexperience, you know, kind of bit him in the ass. And against Volkov, he was going against a really good striker. He's lost two fights. But Walt Harris is still a big, big, dangerous force. So on merit alone, he's not going to get cut. And then also, you know, Dana's got a fucking heart. You know, he's not a piece of shit. You know, he's a good fucking guy. Dana White he's a good friend to have in your corner. Trust me, I'm telling you from experience. Dana's not a fucking asshole. For as much as people want to say that, trust me, I'll tell you right now, he's not. You'd be a dick with him, he'd be the worst fucking enemy, the worst man you know. You know what I mean? But same here. You know what I mean? You're a dick with me, buddy. Well, we've been there, Lewis. We've been there.
Don't I know it? I wish people could. We should have a separate podcast of all of our arguments. It'll be the most popular thing we did.
Oh God, it's not pretty viewing though.
With Dana, you say that that's a natural dynamic of power, right? The dynamic of a boss. Everyone says that most people hate their bosses. If you talk to most people, they go, "Ah, my fucking boss is a dick. My manager's a dick. My teacher's an asshole. That cop over there is a dick. That guy." When you're in a position of power, you will naturally be inclined, I don't want to say abuse the power necessarily, but you're going to be inclined to flex that power. And when somebody's flexing their power on you at any given moment, you're like, yeah, fuck that guy, even if they're the nicest guy in the world.
Well, yeah, you are right. In a typical workplace scenario, like we said at the beginning, those guys at a factory, I hated my boss at factories because, you know, why does your boss come and talk to you if you're working in a factory? Well, probably because you're not doing your fucking job. Probably because you're going for 35-minute long shit, okay? And there's no amigos in those factories. Or maybe you're chatting to the guys, you know, down at the loading bay, or maybe you're not coming back from your lunch break on time. So anytime they come up to you and they say, hey, what the fuck, Bisping? You know, come on, man. You're like, okay. But then behind their back, you talk shit. I'll be honest,
even if they're not coming checking up on you, you feel like they are, like, oh, why is he fucking over my shoulder right now? Like, you get this feeling of like, or even simply if there's a cop that comes up behind you, even if their lights aren't on, you go like, oh, fuck.
Oh, that's the worst.
Authority that's coming over you and you're like, fuck, I gotta be subservient, I gotta do my job, I gotta look forward.
But in the UFC, I think the majority of people don't feel like that because number one, they want to be in the UFC. They want to be a part of it. And Dana treats everyone with respect. Unless you talk shit about him, then he's going to talk shit back. So on the whole, in fact, in general, you know, people don't feel like that about Dana. They don't hate their boss. They like their boss. You know what I'm saying? He's a great guy. But of course, anytime there is that power scenario, as you said, in a general circumstance, yeah, you know, people, I think it's just human nature. If somebody has power over you, you know, then it does create like a weird atmosphere. But Dana, he's not like that at all. And I'll tell you that from experience. But yeah, if you're at work and someone's breathing down your fucking neck, yeah, you want to tell them to piss off.
Well, you always, like, no matter what, even if you're just having a pleasant conversation, if there's a person who's quote unquote above you in the power structure, you feel like your back's against the wall in some way or another. And depending on your personality, it's like, well, my back's against the wall, I lash out. Like, I immediately fucking go like, nah, I don't need my back to be against the wall. I never worked well within that power structure. Did you ever see that documentary? Maybe it was, they made a movie about it. I think there's a documentary as well, but they talk about, the Stanford prison experiments.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, we've talked about this before though.
Oh, but it's super. It's the same thing. Very, yeah. Very interesting. I think you just sort of like you give somebody that whatever it is, even the hall monitor in high school, you put that badge on them and they go like, well, where are you going?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I guess for those that haven't heard it, because half of the podcast listeners maybe didn't listen to that one. So they did an experiment where some members of the public were brought in. If I get this wrong, Lewis, correct. I mean, members of the public were brought in. Half of them were prisoners and half of them were essentially the prison workers. And then the more and more time progressed, the prison workers started just being absolute cunts. Do you know what I mean? Because they were in this position of power and then they had such little respect for the prisoners, even though they weren't prisoners and they knew they weren't prisoners. Yeah. And I forget what they did, but they were just being absolute assholes.
Within hours, the power dynamic became apparent because they were just playing, they were role playing. But students, they were like, all right, you're going to be a prisoner, you're going to be a guard. And they said, let's see what happens. And within hours, the guards are talking down to the prisoners. Within days, they had to shut down the experiment because the guards started being physically abusive towards the prisoners. It was wild, really, really interesting. And I guess it was inconsistencies with the experiment. But I always, that cited a lot with this power dynamic. And when people talk about how they hate cops or they hate this guy or their boss or whatever, I always think about that. And I go, it's sort of built into the dynamic and the power structure. Like the cops are always cops. I don't know why. They always seem like they're being dicks. I don't think that they're all bad people, but for some reason they get in the uniform and you're not walking in that line. They say, hey, keep your fucking eyes forward. And you've sort of fallen the line.
But I don't think that's fair. To mention cops when you say that, because if I'm a cop, and here's how I want my cops to be, my cops, like I own a fucking town, like I'm the mayor of fucking Anaheim Hills. No, but if you're a cop, you want to be respected. You know what I mean? And you need to know that you're not here to be fucked around with. Even if I say something, when I say it one time, you fucking react and you listen and you do as you're fucking told. Now, that said, you don't have to be an asshole. You don't have to be disrespectful, but certainly firm. Very, very firm. You have to be. That's what, realistically, if I've got a cop in the neighborhood dealing with a criminal, I don't want them to fucking be pussyfooting around the guy. You know what
I
mean?
So, no, I agree.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost a militarized like way of doing things, right? So if I'm up to no good and I feel like this guy's my buddy, I'm going to be that much more likely to take that shot. But if this
you're gonna
guy
take like, advantage.
Yeah, he's like, hey, what the fuck? Sit down right now. Like, it sucks. And you don't want to be disrespected. You're like, what the fuck's your attitude, buddy? But at the same time, you sort of put people in their place. It's like shocking in a weird way.
For a cop, though, it's okay. But if I'm at fucking work, if I'm back in the factory days and there's a little cocksucker, right, that, you know what I mean? He's my supervisor and he's been there a little bit longer than me. You know what I mean? And he hasn't really got any fucking power, but he keeps flaunting that so-called power, that imaginary power that he has in his mind, when in reality he has zero fucking power over me. Yeah, I don't take that very well. If he's my true boss, I'll do what I'm told. But if some little fucking jump star who's just a little bit above me starts telling me what to do and things like that, yeah, that really does get on the tits, you know?
Yeah. Okay, real quick, before we get some questions going on, let me just tell you, if you love the show, go subscribe on our iTunes right now. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. We love the great reviews that enables people to find the show, so make sure you keep doing that. Tell some friends about the show. That always helps as well. Post us on your favorite Reddit or the Underground or message board or whatever else it is that you use to communicate about mixed martial arts and podcasts. Also, go to our YouTube channel. You can subscribe right there. Hit the notification button. Get a notification every time we're about to drop a new show on YouTube. And if you guys want access to the entire on-demand library, all the shows that we've ever done, you can get them at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM, get a 14-day free trial, get every episode we've ever done, both ad-free and uncensored. And also, if you want to join the conversation, please shoot us an email, bympod@gmail.com. Fan art, fan questions, video questions, audio questions, anything.
We love it all. Just a quick update on this UFC lightweight champion scenario. There's some odds out there. Right now, Conor McGregor is the favorite at the bookies to be the next champion at plus 100. Poirier is at plus 200. Tony Ferguson plus 600. Michael Chandler plus 700. Gagey 900. Then it starts getting stupid. With GSP coming in at plus 2,500. Never going to happen. He's fucking retired and he's a welterweight. But still, let's get stupid. Let's get crazy. All right, Lewis, you got to run. You got to get to Barstool Sports, you big shot. We're doing another show Thursday. Of course, this weekend, we got Anderson Silva fighting Uriah Hall. And it's a very good fight card in general. I'll be commentating that one. So we'll talk about Anderson Silva's career. We'll break down his best moments, his worst moments, his shittiest moments, whatever you want to do. And we'll have a great show as well. But before we let you go, Brian, do we have any questions, my friend?
I got a question here from our favorite Roland from Germany.
Good old Roland.
Hello, doggy nation. This is Roland Wixer from Germany. Lewis and Michael, would you rather go to prison for 1 year or go to the hospital for 1 year because you're sick and have pain and stuff like that?
Oh, he's so tender at the end. I've got to say this though, Brian. I swear to God, when I was looking at Roland Wixer from the Germany, you know, oh, I was thinking to myself, he kind of looks like the Brian. He looks like you, Brian. You look like each other. Bring Roland back on and then put you back on. I want to see you and you side by side. Roland Wixer from the Germany. And thank you for the question, Roland.
So here's me, right? You guys can see me.
Yeah, we can see you.
And now here's Roland.
There's a little similarity, Lewis.
I honestly, I'm not 100% positive that Roland is not Brian. I've never seen Brian and Roland in the same place, same time.
You know, just like Batman. What was his question? Would I rather have a year in prison or a year in hospital? Well, having spent time in both, I have the ability to answer this question through experience. But yeah, I don't know. Put me in prison. I'd rather be in prison, I think, than in hospital. I mean, I don't know. Think about it. So you're in hospital, okay. It depends on the illness, but people are going to come to you. They're going to bring you things. You know, they're going to bring you flowers, sweets, things like that. You get pitied. People feel sorry for you. You may be pumped full of drugs, and that could be a good time, right? But on the flip side, you could be possibly dying from cancer or getting treated for cancer, having a very, very nasty operation. If you're going to be in hospital for 1 year, it's got to be bad. It's bad. It's terminal. It's life-saving. Whereas in prison, you might die. You might get shanked. You know what I mean? But you still got, you haven't got freedom, but you're not ill. You're not sick. You're not dying. You can still read books. You can still, I don't know, Lewis, what would you do?
I mean, it really just depends on what the sickness is. If I'm really like I have a little toothache right now. Right, strike me
on. Oh, God, you're still going on, Lewis? Please, no, stop.
I went to the dentist, and I got new insurance 11 months ago, and you can't get anything major. I have to get a crown. I can't get anything major until the insurance is in for a year. So now I have to either go out of pocket and pay three times as much, or I could wait it out a month.
Welcome to the USA, baby. If you want to get something done, you got to go bankrupt, motherfucker. Get yourself over to England. It'll be free. It'll be free. Or go over the border to the Canada. It'll be free for you also.
I'm not going to England for dental work, okay? That's psychotic.
It is.
I think I've also been in handcuffs before. I've never been to prison, but I've been in a jail cell overnight multiple times. And that freedom, that loss of freedom, there's nothing less, you know, or nothing more dehumanizing than having to ask a man when you could wipe your own ass. I think
having spent a year at Her Majesty's pleasure, a month, pardon me, I never once asked anybody if I could wipe my own ass. So I don't know what little, you know, which scene from Oz is skewing your opinion of prison, but you don't have to ask permission to wipe your ass. And you got to bear in mind, hospitals are miserable places. I don't want to be in a hospital surrounded by sick people, dying people, grieving people. You know what I mean? Hospital. I hate going to a hospital. Last time I was in a hospital, other than my own operation, was when I thought Lucas was, you know, in a bad way. And just being in there, just you can just sense the sadness. You know, people are in there. They're coming here to die. They're sick. There was a children's hospital next door for children with cancer and things like that. It's like, oh my God. It's just
the reality is people are coming there to get better, but I have the same way. I look at the negative side of it. I'm like, with glasses half empty, right? It's like, no, people are dying in there. When I go to the hospitals, because I'm dying.
Listen, prison, I'm going to take over. Okay, I'll be good, right? Prison rules, baby. I'll fly. I'll be fine. I'm still jerking off. I'm still getting fed. I'm still hitting the gym. I'm doing push-ups. I'm reading books. I'm going to come out with a fucking degree. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to come out educated, Bisping. You give me a year in prison, I come back. Ooh, very hoity-toity. You put me in hospital for a year. No, fuck that. Put me in prison. I would rather be in prison than in the most miserable place on earth. Brian, where would you rather be, prison or hospital?
You get like better food in prison, I think, right?
No, come on.
The hospital, you get whatever you want.
Fair enough. Yeah, people can come visit you in the hospital whenever you want, pretty much. So I'd rather be in the hospital.
You get blowjobs in the hospital, too.
Free drugs. Right.
Unless you really make nice with your cellmate. That's a whole other podcast, Bisping.
Yeah, that is another podcast. When I was in prison, I shared it with this little
well, you know what? Not enough. We don't need to hear what happened.
Okay. Listen, story. I don't care. I'm going to go in. I'm going to give you the details. Okay, I did fuck him. So what? It's a very lonely place. Don't put that on a highlight. No, I did it.
And you fucked him.
I'm like, fuck it. You know, hey, prison rules, baby. Let's go. He's like, dude, I've only been here a day. Let me get fucking acclimatized. I'm like, no, pull your pants down. Let's go. No, prison rape is not a laughing matter. No, I was locked up with this weird little arsonist, a little introvert dude. I wonder if he ever sees me doing this shit. He's like, oh, yeah, I was in prison with that guy. But still, anyway, Lewis, you got to run. On that note, We'll wrap this one up. I want to say a big shout out, Roland Vixen. Roland, thank you very much. Every time you deliver with a hilarious question, the delivery really is. The question is okay. We had a chat, but the delivery and the sexualness of the way you deliver these lines, Roland, oh my God. I wonder, is he from Germany or is he not? But either way, who gives a shit? Khabib, well done. Lewis, I'm going to say well done. Everybody, well done. Until Thursday, fuck off.
All right, we'll see you guys on Thursday. Thanks for watching the show. Check you then. Peace.